attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Also in studio, we have a guest today, attorney Catherine Holt. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Joe Pippin. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you. Catherine's been on our show many times before. She's our family law attorney for the firm, does all the family law cases. So if you have a question about pre- or post-marital agreements, child custody, or time-sharing.
Absolutely.
It's time-sharing, right?
Yes.
That's a weird name for our children, time-sharing your children, I think.
But. It used to be called visitation, but now they stripped that out of Chapter 61, and it's referred to, yes, as time-sharing. And who's going to be, and the word custody isn't in there anymore. So are you a majority time-sharing parent or a minority time-sharing parent? So for some reason, the Florida legislature thought it was going to be better to rename all of those various categories.
Or maybe they'd like to have their time-sharing hours changed. Maybe we'll talk about that.
Yes, very good.
All right, so if you have a family law question of any type, you call in. If you have estate planning or any other type of question, actually, we tackle all questions. If we know the answers, we share it with you. If we don't, we find you a resource. And you have a toll-free number to call the show. It's 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. You also can watch today's show on WeBeamTV.com. And they are here filming the show. We're also on Facebook Live. And you're also listening on one of 12 stations around Florida. And if you would like to call, no matter where you are, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. We always like that first caller to come in. And I kind of break the ice on other callers. But if you have a question, something you've been worried about all night, hey, we're here every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock to tackle your legal questions, give you peace of mind, get you pointed in the right direction. Again, the toll-free number is 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. All right, since we brought it up, let's talk about time-sharing of children. So it used to be, I think the common thought used to be that the mom, I guess, considering she would be a decent mom with no problems associated with her, the mom would have the primary custody of a minor child, say under 6 years old. It was always better. I think the common thinking used to be, not sure it is now, the common thinking was the child should stay with the mom in the early years. So how is the thinking about that these days?
Well, when it would come to time sharing, if mom was the majority time sharing parent, then dad would typically have overnights with the child, say every other weekend, alternating weekends, plus the dad would have a dinner, such as a Wednesday or Thursday. Huge shift right now because dads are seeking 50-50 time sharing. And it's not unusual, especially with our local counties here, where the judges will grant equal time sharing. But when you think about equal time sharing, there are so many different permutations, Joe. Depending on the age of the child, is it week on, week off with the mom? Or there are plans like 3-4 plans. You can start rotating. You can do 5 days, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. So different ways to be able to adjust when it comes to the 50-50. I also had a client once where the mom lived in France and the dad was here in Hillsborough County. So we did a 50-50 time sharing, but guess what that was? Month on, month off. So the child was here for a month and then would go to France for a month, and the child was homeschooled and basically living large, living both here and in France. The problem is with the 50-50 time sharing is it becomes sometimes confusing to the child as to, you know, where's the home base? Where does the child live? So let me ask you a question, Joe. Would you want to be in a situation where you lived one place for a week, then another place another week, so is it week on, week off? the older you get, and let's just say it's a female child, where does she keep all of her things? You know, her blow dryer, all her personal items, her clothes.
Have to have two sets of everything.
That's the problem. Is it two sets of everything, or do you have little Johnny or little Mary going back and forth with their little suitcase? It becomes very sad sometimes when you look at that situation.
How would the homeschooling work? Each parent would do homeschooling when the child was at their location?
Sometimes that's what parents will choose to do. If they are invested and they believe that homeschooling is the best for the child, there's also virtual school if the kids get old enough where they can actually log into the computer and complete,
say, high
school.
Yeah, I don't know how two parents both trying to make a living living separately can homeschool a child properly.
It's very difficult. Sometimes parents work from home. Sometimes parents work, say, a second or third shift, and they're able to homeschool kids during the day and then go off to work. And, you know, people will do pretty much the best they can for their children. But as long as parents are working together in the best interests of the children, me personally, I like to see a home base for the kids. Some place where the kids, you know, call home, you know, and then have really good, solid, full visitation, time sharing with the other parent. But, you know, what kind of investment do you want to put into your children? What's a good, loving, appropriate way to help the kids thrive? And even if parents can't be together as a marital unit, you know, what can they do to help the kids and to make sure that their best interests are always promoted, always putting the kids first.
All right, if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, you can call about family law, estate planning, any type of law, any type of legal question. Doesn't even have to be a legal question. If you have a problem, I'd love to help you at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Let's go to our first caller, William, calling from Tampa. Hey, William. William, are you there? All right. I guess William is not there. William, call back. If you have a legal question, we can help you. We'll take you as soon as we can right away. And everyone else has a toll-free number, 877-943-9673.
Can I ask you a question, Attorney
Joe?
Sure,
absolutely.
So if you have parents and they have minor children and they want to prename a guardian for their children in the event that both parents would pass away. Let's just say parents are out there and the parents are killed in a car accident, and we're always hoping and praying that nothing like that ever happens. But what if you have good parents and they want to provide and name a guardian to be able to take care of not only the person but the property for their children? What legal document or what can you do to help parents to give them peace of mind with respect to their little ones?
Well, I think it's very important for young parents to have a will. A lot of them don't think it's important.
No,
but
they don't.
The question is, you know, you have minor children. Who do you want to raise those? And who do you want to be managing the money for their benefit? Those are two very important questions. They really shouldn't be the same person most of the time. You should have a financial manager of the assets for the benefit of the child, and you should have a guardian that's requesting money for the benefit of the child. They should really be two different people. And you can make that happen in a will or a trust. If you make it happen in a... You have to appoint the guardian in the will, but you should probably have a trust to manage the money for the benefit of the child. And the two hopefully would be able to work together. So it's very, very important to do that. You know, the hardest question for young people that come in to do their estate planning is, who's the guardian of the child going to be?
Absolutely.
If something happens to both of you.
Joe, I have had a number of cases, and it's so sad, where the young dad has died of cancer, and then a few years later, the young mom dies of cancer or dies in a car accident. And these young parents have not done their estate planning, so what do you need to do at that point? You need to file for guardianship. And then it becomes very expensive, and then you have the court looking and giving their oversight and perhaps requiring the appointment of a guardian ad litem for the best interests of the children. And you really have no idea when the parents have not done their estate planning. You don't know the wishes of the parents, because maybe they come with an extended family, a number of brothers and sisters. But you would want to know, who would the parents have wanted these children to be raised by? Or maybe it's a godparent, or maybe it's a great family that they go to church with that they're not related to. So if parents, please, I ask you, because I don't want these kids, if there's ever a situation, I don't want to have to file a guardianship and have the judge make a decision. I want you, parents, to make your decision. And like Joe said, you can name the guardian of the person of your children in your will. So please consider that.
All right. Is that ever a topic for like a postmarital agreement where there's a pending divorce where they agree on the guardian in the document?
Well, let me tell you one thing. When it comes to a premarital agreement, okay, it is against public policy to address any issues regarding children, which is very interesting. When I say it's against public policy, we're talking about against the public policy of the state of Florida to pre-designate or pre-decide any issues regarding children, because they say you can't look into the future as to who would be a good parent or not. And so you can't designate in a prenup, okay? Now, can you designate it in a will, the person in will? Absolutely. So you have to make sure that you're using the proper documents, and that's why I really caution people not to try and do it themselves and figure it out themselves, because if they designate or name someone in a wrong document, it could be unenforceable in a court of law.
All right, the question was, so what about a postmarital agreement? Can you agree on a guardian?
I have never seen that happen, because whether it's a prenuptial or postnuptial, who are the parties? Okay, it's the husband and the wife, okay, or the potential husband and wife. If you're naming somebody outside of the husband and wife unit, that person's not a party to the agreement. So you can't enforce an issue regarding a non-party. So you're not going to name a guardian either in a pre- or a postnuptial agreement.
Just in a will, you've nominated someone. They don't have to accept the job.
Well, absolutely.
So can both parties nominate someone in a postmarital agreement? It would be their choice.
They could. You know what? At least it would show to the judge it's their preference, whether it's enforceable or not.
Maybe they could agree to nominate the same people in the document, and they agree to do that in their will.
Yes. Now that would be good.
Yeah, maybe.
And then you could have the consistency of just like when you do the estate planning, and then I'll handle the pre or postnuptial agreement, and then my documents reference your trust and your trust reference my agreement.
Right.
So that works great.
Let's go to Mary in Newport Richey.
Hi.
Hey, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm here alone. My husband passed away 5 years ago.
No, I'm very sorry.
And we have no children, and I was hoping to distribute things rather than having it go to the courts through a bill or anything.
Or have it distributed through a trust to avoid probate?
No, I was thinking about doing it in bank accounts by naming
transfer on death or paid on death?
No, just making them beneficiaries in a CD.
Yeah, well, that's paid on death or transfer on death.
Okay, but they require Social Security numbers, and I'm so embarrassed to ask them for I don't know what to do.
Well, you might consider a trust instead of having a transfer on death or a paid on death account. The reason would be that if it's in a trust, it can be used for your benefit while you're living, but incapacitated.
Well, I could still use the CDs, too, as they renew.
Well, but yes, but if you have a paid on death of a beneficiary of a brother or sister,
right,
then nothing happens until you die. If it's in a trust, then the trustee's job would be to manage it for your benefit while you're living. I mean, you could become incapacitated for a couple of years, and the trustee could be managing the money for your benefit because you're unable to while you're living. And that would also avoid a guardianship proceeding.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of my clients, I've gone through the same conversation with many, many clients. They said, well, why can't I just have a beneficiary? I paid on death, transfer on death on my CDs or money market accounts and so forth. You can. And does that avoid probate? Yes. But is there a better way to do it? And I'm saying a trust is a better way, because a trustee could use it for your benefit while you're living.
I see. I saw you on Home Keepers yesterday.
Oh, I was on yesterday. That was a repeat of a prior show. But
uh-huh.
So what was I talking about yesterday?
Well, I talked to my sister over in Titusville and told her about it, and we talked the whole time, so I didn't hear it.
Oh,
but
just
she saw
me.
I'm listening today.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
All right, thank you. Hey, if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, 877. Your question can be about any area of law. We're talking to Catherine Holt, family law attorney. I do a lot of estate planning, but we have other practice areas in our firm. And 34 years under my belt of doing Ask an Attorney all about Florida law, so it's probably not too much you can ask me that I haven't heard many times and have an answer for. But if I don't have an answer, hey, I'll let you know, and we find you an answer. But you can call it 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open.
Joe, the one thing I want to mention to folks out there is here in the state of Florida, we have something known as adult adoption. And adult adoption is not available in all 50 states of our union. Florida is very unique. And that means here in the state of Florida, if you are an adult, 18 or over, you can be adopted by another adult. And when does that typically happen? Maybe it was a foster situation. Maybe you were fostering some kids. Maybe you're a lady or a gentleman out there who has...
Well, my favorite case that you and I worked on...
Oh, I know that one.
...was the young man came in. He was not the natural child of the mother who really raised him and took care of him.
He was about 45. Listen, remember that he was about 45.
And for a Mother's Day present, he came in the week... during Mother's Day and paid.
Yes, he did.
For him to be adopted by his what he really considered his mother.
That's right. What had happened in that situation, you can't do this nowadays, but there had been a lady up in another state. She was having a lot of babies. And she had this little son, and she couldn't care for him. So she asked a lady who was down the street, a very lovely Christian lady who wasn't able to have any children. She said, "I can't care for this last one. Would you like him?" And so she ran down. She said, "Absolutely. I mean, what a blessing." And so she raised this little boy, and then they ended up moving to Florida. And you're absolutely right, Joe. He was 45, and he said, "For a Mother's Day present, I want to be adopted. I want that legal bond." I mean, he felt as though he was her son, okay,
yeah,
but
he did.
Wanted that legal bond. So here in the state of Florida, but here's the thing that I want people to understand. It's unlike a child adoption where you have to go through the bifurcated proceeding of terminating parental rights and it's in a whole dog and pony show. An adult adoption is a relatively streamlined procedure, but you do have to give notice to the biological parents. Just notice. Now, in our case, Joe, the biological parents had been passed away. So you might ask me, what does notice mean, Catherine? If somebody wants to be adopted by someone else, can the biological parents object? And the answer is no. They have no standing to object. Have I had situations with adult adoptions where we give the notice to the biological parents and then they show up in court trying to object? That's happened. It's uncomfortable. But what happens there is the judge will allow the parents to be heard and they can voice why they think the adoption should not go through. And in the last adult adoption, the judge said, "Thank you very much, biological parents. I'm going to have to ask you to leave because you don't have standing." Okay, you don't have standing to object because as an adult, if you want and consent to be adopted by another adult, you absolutely can.
Hey, suppose that makes me think of a situation where I was asked a question like this. It was a young lady with a young child. I think she was from Puerto Rico. The father of the child was in Puerto Rico, and she's in Florida. So she's met a new guy in her life. The other guy was just a happenstance relationship for a short period of time, and they had a child. She moves to Florida with the child. Now she has a new husband who wants to adopt the child.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the chance of you serving someone in Puerto Rico, the father, and him coming to Florida is probably remote.
That's right.
So that's what happens in those type of cases?
What you have to, and that's called step-parent adoption. And once again, just like adult adoption, it's a relatively streamlined procedure, okay? You need to give notice to the biological father, and that's the key. You have to be able to prove to the court that you did your absolute best to put the biological father on notice that the child was going to be adopted by the mom's new husband. Now, in Puerto Rico, you can absolutely have him served. Okay, you can have those documents translated to Spanish. You can hire a process server. You can get the documents in his hands. You can have someone hand deliver those documents to him. Then it's up to the biological father. If he wants to object, then he will need to come to court when there's the hearing on the step-parent adoption. But let me mention one thing, which sometimes can be attractive, shall I say, to the biological parent. If the husband then's coming in wanting to adopt that child, then the biological father's child support obligations are absolutely cut off. He doesn't have to pay for child support anymore.
Yeah, I don't think there were any in this case anyway. So.
Well, but that's sometimes, you know, when you say to the dad, look, you won't have to pay, and we have a very good and decent man who wants to step up and be the father for this child. I would say most of the time, Joe, I've been able to have some consent and an agreement by the biological father.
All right, let's go to Antonio in Tampa.
Hey, thank you guys for taking my call. A few quick questions. When you get divorced and you have to, you know, the judge says you have to sell the house, when is it decided who's responsible for the taxes and who's responsible for the homeowners association fee and stuff like that? Isn't that stuff predetermined or prearranged on what during the divorce?
Yeah, I certainly would want to address that. And now typically when it comes to property in the property taxes, when you go to closing, they will prorate the various amounts that are due, so you don't have to worry about that. But when it comes to homeowners, or what about issues like the utilities or the lawn or the pool or the pest control or other expenses, other quote unquote operating expenses? Because when you go to sell the house, Antonio, you typically don't sell it in a week. It's going to take some time. Even if you land a buyer very quickly, if they're going to have a financing contingency, that could take, you know, 30, 45, 60 days. So the big question is, during that point in time, who's paying for the expenses? Who's paying for the mortgage? Is there going to be a credit at closing? And then here's the other thing. When you have the buyer and you're going to have the closing, they're going to want to go for a walkthrough of the house to make sure it's all in good condition. So you want to make sure that the last person who's in the house leaves the refrigerator, the washing machine, doesn't take out the ceiling fans, or you know, just leaves the house in good condition and broom clean. So you need to be real specific in that agreement to make sure.
Well, the question I'm asking is because all that's already happened, and they're trying to say that. Well, and I'm figuring that the person that was living there is the one responsible. The person that hasn't been living there shouldn't be responsible for any of that pressure washing, because the house has been sold. But now they want to pressure wash, HOA fees, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't feel my brother's responsible for that because he hasn't been living there.
Well, see, if they co-own the house, then they may co-own and have co-responsibilities for, you know, for all of the upkeep and operating expenses of the house. But let's be real honest. Even if you put that aside, if it's not in writing and there's no obligation, it's ambiguous. Okay? It doesn't say he's responsible or she's responsible. There would need to be, if it came to the point where there was a lot of money at stake, there would need to be a motion filed with the court for clarification. And
who's responsible?
Yeah, exactly, Antonio. You got it.
And another thing, I mean, do lawyers, do you guys charge for talking to people on the phone?
Nope. I don't charge for, I offer a free consultation over at my office. I know.
I'm saying once you take the case and I call you regarding anything, am I on the clock?
Once I'm retained, it's an hourly rate, but I don't charge for any consultation because I like to talk to my clients and figure things out. So come on in and see me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, it's not a problem.
Thank you, Antonio.
Let's go to Nancy in Sun City Center. Nancy, you there?
Yes. My question is, if you move in from out of state, are there any of your papers like trust, will, power of attorney, health care surrogate, any of that has to be changed or updated?
Well, the standard answer, I've had that question many, many times. My standard answer to that question is it should all be reviewed. and I can review. I don't charge for the first meeting to review documents. Some documents need to be updated and tweaked, like if you have a will or a trust, you redo a codicil or a trust amendment. Saying you're now a resident of Florida, there's a trustee powers section that's usually revised somewhat because they're different from state to state. Power of attorneys and living wills and healthcare surrogates and those documents should really be updated every 3 or 4 years anyway. So, yeah, there's some things to do when you move in from another state usually.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Nancy, we do have an office in Sun City Center. If you would like a free consult or review of your documents, I'd be glad to help.
Thanks a lot.
Joe, where is that office located in Sun City Center?
It's right on the main drag of Sun City Center. So it's Route 674.
Okay.
It's in the Sun City Center Plaza. It's right on the main road, though. It's in the Pant Wealth Building. And the Pant Wealth Building houses the Pant Wealth Financial Planner on one side of the building and Lake Michigan Credit Union now. It used to be Encore Bank. They have a new credit union.
Didn't know that.
That took over the bank.
Okay.
And that's right next to the Chamber of Commerce. So we're right in a central location in Sun City. So.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
Let's go to Bill in Longboat Key.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, Bill, what can we do for you?
Just a kind of a situation. 12 years ago, my daughter married a gentleman from overseas, from another country. And anyway, so when he got here, they separated. And after they separated, she became pregnant. And he said, it's not his child. No big deal, no fight or anything. But he said, no, it's not me. So he's 11 and a half years old. We moved to Florida. So I never changed her phone number in case he ever wanted to call her. So 11 and a half or 12 years later, I'm just wondering. We don't know where he's at or if he went back to Kosovo, but they never got divorced. And the reason we never got divorced was the judge told us that as long as the courts are not involved in it, you want to move and do what you want to do, that's fine. But anyway, so we're afraid to try to contact him, whether he went back to the other country or still here, because they told us that when he comes back, he can do what he wants to do after maybe 30 days. We're afraid that he could take the child, even at 11 and a half years old, and go back to the other country. And so that's why we've never done anything. It's okay. We don't hear from him. No problem.
Well, was the child born during the marriage?
Still married. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But they were married when the child was born, though.
Yeah, they divorced. They separated, but yes. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just ask you a question. When's the last time that you heard from the husband?
The last time was when he came, when we saw him at Walmart. We were carrying the baby. He came by and lifted up the blanket and looked at him and said, have a nice day or something nice.
So that was about 11 years ago?
Yeah, 11
okay.
and a half years ago.
I'm not going to talk about the specifics of what I could do for you because it would be very personal and confidential. But
sure.
But I'm going to tell you something. I've been practicing family law for well over 20 years, and mm-hmm. I've had situations like this. I have the solution for you, but I'm not going to tell you over the air because I would want to tell you on a personal and confidential level. Your daughter is a resident of what county?
Sarasota.
Sarasota. Okay, you can have her call me and we can do a telephone consultation if you like.
Oh, great. Yes.
Okay, has the husband ever one question, has the husband ever been a resident of the state of Florida?
No.
Okay. I have an answer for you, like I said, but I'm not going to say it on the air because it's, like I said, it's really delicate and confidential. But tell your daughter to call me, and we will talk. Catherine has answers.
Hey, Bill, is the husband's name on the birth certificate as the father?
Yes, I told her. I said, since he doesn't say so, he there's no fighting, by the way. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I said, since he says it's not his child, don't put it down. But she did anyway.
All right. Well, let me tell you one urban myth. Okay, because a father's name is on a birth certificate, that is not a legal adjudication of paternity, okay? People say, well, that my name's on the birth certificate, so I'm dad. Well, that's nice, but that doesn't establish you as dad. Because as a mother, I hate to say this, but you can basically put whoever you want on that birth certificate, and sometimes it's done for not so good reasons, and other times it's because perhaps the mom isn't quite too sure. Sometimes there's a birth certificate that has no dad listed,
but he is the father, and there's no doubt that one thing about this is not any fighting, so he is the father. And,
Catherine was born during the marriage, though, so
yes.
Isn't the father the responsible?
Yes, but we've got it. She. Unfortunately, it sounds as though dissolution of marriage really may be in her best interest and the best interest of the child. And like I said, have her call me, and we'll talk confidentially.
Sure.
So, Joe, can I go ahead and give? Let me.
Sure.
Do you have a pen and paper?
I have it right here.
All right. This is my number, 727.
Right.
586.
Right.
3306.
Right.
And go to extension 112.
Okay, 727-586-3306, extension 112.
And tell your daughter to call me, and maybe you can even be on the phone, and you can listen, and we can all talk together.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Where are you located?
I'm in Largo, Pinellas County, so it's a little bit, how long does it take to get from Sarasota to where I am? Maybe about an hour?
Sure.
Maybe a little. Or
if any documents need to be signed, we have office in Lakewood Ranch.
Sure, we've got Lakewood Ranch.
Dennis Moses goes there all the time.
Oh, okay. Or Sunset.
Yeah. Really good. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Well, great. I'll let you go. I know there's other people waiting. But thanks a million.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye.
Let's give out the number, then we'll go to Lisa in Tampa. If you want to call the show, you have 15 minutes or so left in the show. It's 877-943-9673. If you want to call the show, it's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Lisa in Tampa.
Good morning.
Hey, Lisa.
Good morning.
I have a question. My sister's husband died about a year and a half ago. The house and I think a vehicle property was in his name only. And nothing has been done up until this point, and how do we proceed?
Well, certain property, like the auto, she could take a death certificate to DMV and probably get the auto changed to her name without any probate proceeding. So are there bank accounts or real estate just in his name?
The real estate is in his name. Bank accounts, I think, is okay. I think that's okay. In both of their names.
So the real estate was the homestead?
I don't know.
Okay. And did he have a will?
No.
Okay. And were there children of the marriage?
No.
Were there children of him prior to the marriage?
No. No children at
okay.
all.
Well, the bottom line is she would get everything, but we have to start a probate proceeding for that to happen to get it out of a deceased person's name. And that's something we do quite often on a regular basis. So if she would like some advice and help on how to do that, we'd be glad to help.
And how long does that usually take?
Probably at least 6 months. And depending on the facts and the slowness of the court sometimes, it could take a little bit longer.
So 6 months or up to a year?
It could be. But if it's fairly simple and only one piece of real estate is involved, you said the bank accounts are okay. The car she can do herself probably very quickly herself with DMV.
Okay.
The real estate depends on where it's. Hopefully it's in Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. And if they both live there, that would be homestead. So it could be. It could easily be 6 months. Doesn't sound too complicated at all.
If she were to donate one of the vehicles, does she need to transfer the title into her name with DMV prior to that?
There might be a way she could take a death certificate down to. You know, when I give an answer to DMV, I hold my breath because
a
person goes into a government agency, and it could be different from person to person inside of that same office, or it could be different people giving different answers in different offices.
Maybe she could just contact one of those but, donate the car places and just ask them, hey.
But here's the deal. If we have to go through probate anyway, then she will be issued letters of administration with the authority to transfer the car. So if we're going to do probate anyway, she could just wait a little bit to transfer it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Thank you. All right. Let's go to Sandra in Sarasota.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Sandra.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Quick question. We have a trust, and we have a power of attorney and a designated health care surrogate.
Mm-hmm.
But is it necessary to have a declaration of pending guardian?
You, in your documents, there should be a nominated guardian in the will.
So we don't have to have a declaration of pre-need guardian, right?
Oh, the pre-need guardian might be in your power of attorney for you. If you're if you become incapacitated, incompetent in any way. So the pre-need guardian is a standard paragraph in my power of attorneys that you would sign when you give someone a power of attorney, but that relates to you, not your child.
Okay, so the pre-need guardian is a standard paragraph in the power of attorney.
In my power of attorney it is, yes.
And so we don't need an extra, we don't need a separate pre-need guardian where you have to set bond and all that.
No, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, but no, the pre-need guardian in the will that you give some, say your husband or sibling or somebody, the power of attorney to act in your behalf, my standard document has a pre-need guardian clause. So the purpose of a power of attorney is to avoid a guardianship, but if you have to have one, you want to nominate who that person would be. So that's in the power of attorney document.
But if you're not incapacitated at this time in your life, there really is no necessary to have this. Just have it in the power of attorney.
It'd be no, yeah. That's what I would say. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And also, we're taking one of our children off our trust. Don't their names just, you don't have to leave the name in there. It just takes off, or does it have to say that you're not going to accept for my son so-and-so?
What I normally do is say I've omitted, you know, his or her name for personal reasons, period. I don't give a reason, because reasons can be contested.
Okay. And that's all you need.
I was watching and listening to a probate seminar yesterday, and they were talking about how to omit people. And they said you don't want to give, like, 40% to the daughter and 30% to the two sons because they're already wealthy. Because they could dispute what wealthy means,
right.
So that was one of the points they were making on how to properly omit people in documents or give one more than the other.
Okay, so it's just I omit for personal reasons.
That's it. That's the language I would use.
Okay, thank you. I listen to your program every Saturday. Look forward to it. It's a wonderful program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
You too. Let's go to Paul in Riverview.
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, Joe. Great program.
Thank you.
I'm asking a question about a quick claim deed. I bought land about 40 years ago in Pennsylvania, and we decided we didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it up that anybody could buy it for $1, mm-hmm. a quick claim deed,
mm-hmm.
and someone took it, and everything was fine. That's when I was in New York. I move down here, and I get a letter from an attorney that he wants me to sign it over because they can't find the first fellow that I gave the land to. And I don't know what to do.
What do you mean they can't find? So you deeded it to...
I don't have the records who I deeded it to. That's the problem. And I guess they want the land. It's up on a mountain in Pennsylvania. Do I just go eminent domain
or something like that.
Well, why don't you ask this attorney to send you a copy of the deed since they've already researched it so you can see.
Well, they can't. When I told them that I sold it to this fellow, which I don't even know who he is, my wife has passed, it was all good for 40 years. All of a sudden, I guess they want the land, they want to build on it, and I don't have any records at all.
Was the deed recorded?
I really don't know.
So you need to do a title search on the property to determine what, if any, ownership you have. And since somebody's asking you for something, ask it of them. Tell them to send me your record so I can have an attorney here in Florida look at it. Although, say, for example, I'm not licensed in Pennsylvania, but I could probably look at your proof of ownership of papers and determine what the Pennsylvania attorney that would represent you might have to do. But I wouldn't blindly just sign something because somebody asked you to. I would ask for proof of your ownership.
That's what I was afraid of. I just don't want to sign something and get it notarized.
Yeah, don't sign it. Ask for proof of ownership of your property. Say, if you've done a research or if you had a title company do research, send me a copy of the deed that I supposedly signed 40 years ago. Send me a copy of those records and whatever you've searched and found, send me a copy of it so I can have an attorney review it.
I've got a question. Did he give you the dollar?
Did he give me what?
Didn't you say you sold it for a dollar?
Yes. So I don't even know who the fellow is I sold it to.
Did he give you a dollar or write you a check?
I think he wrote a check. But
interesting. Okay.
At this point, 40 years later, right there, everything was gone, you know? I mean, it's a beautiful spot. Someone bought more land. They want to probably put it on a lake. It's beautiful. But, you know, I don't want it. And
you know what? Let me ask you a question. It's land, so there are property taxes being paid. I mean, maybe someone can just look into the...
Yeah, they used a title search on the property.
Yeah, and sure.
Believe me, if nobody paid property taxes for 40 yeah. years, it'd be long gone.
Exactly.
Mm.
All
mm-hmm.
right? But... get them to send you whatever research they've developed so you can have it reviewed before you make your decision.
I think I'll do that. I'm glad I didn't sign anything.
No,
yeah, don't
no,
sign.
No.
And if you own it, I'll buy it from you for $2.
Wait a minute, $3. Let's get a bidding war going.
I'm telling you, it's beautiful. It's up on a mountain, everything, you know, and it's a deer and the antelope play. But
beautiful.
It's just not for me at that point. We moved and we don't want it. But all of a sudden, after all this time, 40 years later, someone's after it. They want to build. They bought more acreage, and I just didn't know what to do. But I guess I want something for information from them.
No. Hey, I'll go as high as $5.
Okay. So you got it.
All right.
I'll be right over with the tunnels, too.
All right.
All right. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Catherine, you have been requested to give out your phone number.
My telephone number at the law office is 727-586-3306. Go to extension 112. I'm going to give that out again because maybe someone's trying to scramble.
We'll get you at the end of the show.
Oh, at the end of the show.
Well,
okay,
again,
great.
I'll get
All
you
right.
again.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to Al in Tampa.
Yeah, I got something to clarify. Catherine had said that if a father's listed on the birth certificate, it doesn't mean...
Right,
well...
Yeah,
I'm
true.
But if the child's name is the last name equivalent to the father's name on the birth certificate of Florida, that father is the father.
No.
Had to give information. We've done research. I worked the government. Florida, if you call Florida vital statistics, I'm with the federal government, in the state of Florida, if the child's name matches the name of the man on the birth certificate, it's deemed that he gave... He was the informant at the time the birth record was established.
Okay.
Each state is different. You got to clarify with the state what are the state rules for acknowledgement of the man on the birth certificate being the father and the last name of the child. Some states, if they match, it is. Some states, no.
Yeah, it's a presumption if the child is born
right.
during the marriage, even if the father's
not the father. That's that old... Lord Mansfield, correct.
Yeah, it's a presumption the father's the father, whether he's the father or not.
It's called the Lord Mansfield Law in the state of Florida. All right, you all have a good day.
All right,
thanks.
All right, let's see. So, Catherine, let me give you an example of a case. Let's suppose a parent has a special needs child. The parent is aging and concerned about who the guardian would be of the child. So there's something called a standby guardian that can be established through the courts, correct?
Or there's something known as a guardian advocate. Okay.
Guardian advocate. Okay.
Yes. And if you have a child that's a special needs child who has developmental disabilities, okay? As long as the child's a child under the age of 18, the parents take care of the child. Once the child turns 18, they're an adult. So if that individual is unable to care for himself or herself, you can petition the court to be named guardian advocate. And the difference between a guardian advocate and just a regular guardian is there's no adjudication of incapacity. Okay, it's not like, you know, husband or wife or grandma and grandpa who has dementia, Alzheimer's kind of thing. It's an application to the court saying, look, this child has a developmental disability, meaning the child was born with this disability. It's not going to go away. It's a genetic, it's a chromosomal issue. And this child is unable to support him or herself. It's always going to need to be in the care of somebody. So then you can be asked to be appointed guardian advocate. And then from that point, you can have successor guardians or standby guardians, with the goal being always having someone in line to be able to take care of that child who's now emancipated, okay, who needs our help because they have a developmental disability.
All right. So if you would like to receive our poster sheet, is my producer wanting to wave it to me?
He's waving.
Are you on the
you?
Air? Go ahead and be on the air.
Very good.
Would that include a godfather and godmother?
If you want it, you can absolutely name a godfather or a godmother. Absolutely.
As a guardian?
Sure.
Question.
Oh yeah, and that happens a lot. Sometimes they, like me, I'm an only child, okay? I don't have siblings, and my father was an only child. I have a very small family. So with regard to taking care of children, I might reach out to a godmother or a godparent or somebody that I'm close to at church. It may not be somebody that I'm biologically related to. So godparents are great.
All right. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We're here every week during this time period, 8 o'clock. You can catch a rebroadcast of this on WeBeamTV.com. WeBeamTV.com. They've housed a bunch of our programs, actually, and they're all video. If you can watch and learn. Also, if you would like to look at the Facebook page, we have an Ask an Attorney page, a Law Offices of Joseph Pippin page, and my personal page, and we replay the video of the show on all of those Facebook pages as well. Also, it's on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel with all the programs as well, Ask an Attorney. If you have an iPhone, we have an iPhone app, Ask an Attorney, that houses a bunch of different shows. If you would like our free estate planning poster sheet, you can get that one of three ways, and then we'll have Catherine give her information as well. If you would like the poster sheet, it's a large poster sheet, five articles about estate planning on one side, the difference between wills and trusts, the three planning three choices you have in estate planning, trust diagram, little cost of probate chart, and basic information about estate planning is all on one side. On the other side of the sheet, we have all of our office locations, phone numbers, attorneys, website, radio shows. It's a helpful sheet for you to consider what you've done in estate planning and to learn what you could possibly do. If you like it, you can get it one of three ways. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. Young lady there that answers the phone will take your name and address and be glad to mail you the poster sheet at our expense. If you'd like to send me an email with your name and address and request the poster sheet, it's Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P.com. That's A-T-T-Y, P as in Paul, I-P as in Paul.com. And if you'd like to text me your name and address, you can do that at 727-667-3967. And since I'm giving you my text number there, 727-667-3967, if you have a question for Catherine and I on the way out of here for about a half an hour,
that's
getting
right.
her back to her car, you can call us. We'd be glad to talk to you. Catherine, right. It's your turn.
Absolutely. To reach me, you can give me a call at the law office at 727-586-3306, extension 112, or send me an email. My email at the law office is my last name, H-U-L-T, Hult, H-U-L-T, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P dot com. So.
All right, and I might mention, if you email either one of us, you join our email list, and whenever Catherine and I do a radio show together, I'm on her show, which is on a different station, and she's on my show, and we send out a big e-blast telling people about that so they can listen to both shows and learn where each of us are on Saturday mornings. Hey, thank you so much. Thank you, Catherine, for being on the show.
Thank you, Joe, for listening
and watching Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. You have a great weekend. So long.